This is the March 4 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Aaron Curtis of Midco out of Normal, Illinois, Alan Dearden from Ag Review in Morton, Illinois, and Chip Nellinger, also from Morton, Illinois, at Blue Reef Agri Marketing. Our special guest for the day is Dan Bossi. He's with Ag Resource Company out of Chicago. We recorded each of them separately on Friday morning. We'll begin our conversation today laying out the cash grain situation in the central part of Illinois with Aaron Curtis. He's at Midco in Normal. Thank you, Aaron, for taking some time with us. Can you give me a feeling for what's happening on the ground as it relates to cash grain, old crop and new crop?
Yeah, more of the old crop story, I would say, Todd. And I would say with the volatility that we're seeing, especially on the corn and wheat side, right, it's really hard to get a really handle on what grain is worth in the big picture. In environments like that, what we're seeing now with, you know, spreads sharply inverted and limit up days in corn and wheat, I mean, that just plays a defensive role for basis. So we've continued to see basis weaken up here. From the domestic processor side, I would say the exception would be the river, right? We continue to see a little bit of export business move our way. We saw finally an announcement on corn yesterday to unknown destinations. So we've seen CIF values continue to be pretty well supported, suggesting that, we are seeing a little bit of business transferred our way with the Black Sea concerns, right, on, you know, obviously Ukraine is shut down in terms of exports, and the uncertainty of how long that's going to be is driving a little bit of business back our way. It's hard to quantify exactly how much at this point, but we are starting to see a little bit of those signs. The flip side of that is barge freight continues to rocket higher this week along the Illinois up to some 900%. So that kind of mutes some of the basis gains at the Gulf level up and down the Illinois River. Domestic processor market, though, continues to back away with, obviously, the farmer continues to participate a little bit on this rally. But it's more just that uncertainty. And with the May-July corn spread inverting to 50 cents, that just makes the end user a little more patient, thinking some of that commercially hedged grain is going to move their way because, you know, folks aren't going to want to roll into that sharp of an inverse. So that kind of helps originate grain as well, which works against basis. So overall, Todd, the last week, a defensive tone here to basis. And then on the wheat side, it's even more convoluted, I guess you'd say, because we're seeing some bids being rolled to the July or SEP already on old crop and just trying to minimize some of that risk that the end user and the commercial grain elevator has with all this uncertainty.
What kinds of background information or conversations are elevator operators having at this point as it relates to grain and purchases and moving logistics throughout the planet?
Yeah, logistics, I think, has been a key, right, even since last fall and all through the winter, right, with rail freight continuing to be a struggle. And, you know, that doesn't really have anything to do over the winter with anything that's going on today in the Black Sea region, but just freight has been a challenge to move, truck availability, finding drivers to put in trucks and rail freight. Of course, you can contribute COVID to some of that, right, especially as we got through January with, you know, a lot of crews not being able to work full capacity. So that continues to limit some of the freight availability. And I think that's going to continue to be an issue here as we move forward, because then you get into spring and start losing a few farmer trucks as well. So from the commercial grain side, right, just being able to try to move grain in a timely manner and as quickly as what the inverted market is telling you that you need to have this grain moved by continues to be, you know, top of mind for the elevator side. And it looks like it's going to continue to be a struggle here as we move through the spring.
Are there issues you're looking at as it relates to the accumulator or HTAs or any of the kinds of contracts farmers are using?
Yeah, no, not right now. I think obviously some of the accumulator stuff, right, is out there. But, you know, I think after last year, right, with some of those accumulator contracts doubling up, I would say the appetite for some of those, Todd, has been a little bit reduced in this environment. I think producer knows that, or mostly knows, right, that they need to be a little more careful in this volatile environment. So I think the appetite for some of that stuff. And we just haven't bought a lot of new crop, right? I mean, we're, as a Midwest average, we're probably 15 to 20% bought on new crop beans and maybe 10% bought on new crop corn. And I think with the big inverted market from old crop to new crop, and just in general, the uncertainty, especially on corn, involving input costs and what those are going to be, farmers been somewhat reluctant on buying, selling new crop at this point. So I think that's going to continue to be the case until things kind of calm down and they have a little better feel on, you know, what their costs are going to be putting this crop in the ground.
Aaron Curtis is an originator at Midco in Normal, Illinois. Now let's turn our attention to the marketplace directly and how farmers might deal with it. We'll begin in Morton, Illinois with Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing. I asked Chip how farmers should deal with the volatility in this market and what risk management tools they might deploy.
Yeah, everyone's such a different situation. One thing that's in the back of our minds is with what happened in the month of February. You know, obviously the market started this rally in the month of February. We've got the highest spring crop insurance price we've ever had in beans, second highest in corn. For certain producers that have very high APHs, the question may come down to, do you just buy up on crop insurance, even if it means spending a tremendous amount of money? You're going to get a little sticker shock there, but certainly buying up in coverage or adding on some of these private products that get you up to 95% and allowing your crop insurance to do the work. You know, in the case of corn, you've got a 590 average. Use that, and then it buys you time to kind of wait and see. And then obviously, the further north of that you get later this spring or summer, then you're compelled to some action with some puts or sales. That is one way to do it. Another way is, some put strategies. With all this volatility, those are extremely expensive now. And the one thing's for certain, I don't think it's the year to play around with spreads, right? Just this wheat situation tells you, I could argue that, you know, you buy puts in May or July corn. If we break, you're going to, you know, sell off there the quickest, the hardest. But if you get into a liquidation situation, these spread, you know, you've moved these old crop, new crop wheat spreads $1.50, $2 in some cases. And, you know, you could see old crop corn do a moonshot and due to spreading, you know, take the new crop corn lower. There's just things that we can't even think about. So long answer to your question, Todd, but I think it varies, by operation, no one size plan fits all. Crop insurance probably should be strongly considered as maybe comfort level to sleep a little better at night, especially since we've got such a high price level to lock in for a spring crop insurance revenue guarantee.
On the ground this week, what do exports from the United States look like for corn, soybeans, and wheat?
Yeah, they were a little disappointing, to be honest, given the disruption of the Black Sea. However, you know, it was a holiday week. I think a lot of offices were closed there on President's Day. So, you know, it's possible that we were slowed a little bit because of the government holiday. And since that time, we've started to see an uptick. Just yesterday, we sold 330-some thousand tons of corn and some beans. Haven't seen really any flash wheat sales yet. I think the wheat trading industry is so disrupted now with the closure of this Black Sea that they're scrambling. So it's possible that it's going to be delayed a little bit as people try to figure out, where they're going to get the wheat. But certainly as a one-off on the export sales report this week, a little bit concerning, and I think maybe where you're going with that is, are we at levels that are starting to slow demand down? And that may be an argument. In a lot of places, just yesterday, you started seeing corn basis back off pretty dramatically. Some, especially in the east, Indiana processors and elevators rolled those bids out of the May into the July in the process. Not only is the May inverted over the July, so you lose that, but they took anywhere from a nickel to 15 cents off of basis as well. So there's an argument to be made that at these levels, we are starting into rationing demand. That's not an overnight process. That takes weeks to months, but you may be at levels that are, initially starting some of that.
I know you've been watching the Ukraine-Russia issues. I'm wondering what you're thinking about the export markets across the planet and the reconfiguration, potentially, of markets for corn and wheat. I think that's been showing up in both a whole lot in the last several days of this week. Can you tell me about the action in Chicago and your thoughts?
Yeah, just unprecedented, you use the word historic, movements and volatility in spreads. You know, first and foremost, it's easy to kind of get caught up in this. And, you know, you see wheat rallying and corn rallying. And obviously that's, almost a windfall here in the short run for the U.S. farmer. But, it's as a result of some just horrific things happening to the people of Ukraine. So, obviously our hearts go out to those people. But this wheat thing is very, I've been doing this for 26 years, thereabouts, maybe a little more now. I've never seen anything like the move we've just witnessed in the wheat market. Essentially, we moved $5, if you count the movement in the options, $5 in wheat in three trading sessions. So no one was prepared for that. If they told you they were, they're lying to you. So the market's readjusting. Obviously, no one knows, right? For the short run, we have lost the Black Sea. It is closed. How long? We don't know. Does Russia take that over and, the sanctions keep them from exporting wheat and grains out of there? Does, Ukraine prevail? That's the unknown. And I think the bigger unknown is coming ahead here a couple months, fast forwarding, given some of the destruction and the disruption in Ukraine, are they going to be able to get in and plant their spring crops? How much, I've been told by some people that are fairly intelligent. If the fighting stopped today, it would take weeks to months to just resupply everything. They're starting to run out of, fuel and food, and this thing is just a horrific situation, and no one knows how long we're going to lose the Black Sea or whether we're going to get a crop planted there this spring. So the markets are adjusting or trying to figure that out on a moment-by-moment basis.
Chip Nellinger is with Blue Reef Agri-Marketing in Morton. Ellen Dearden is also in Morton, Illinois. She is at AgriView. Ellen, thank you for taking some time on this Friday morning to discuss what's been just a very volatile market with us. Chip went through some of the things as we closed out our conversation there about the war in Ukraine and its impact on the marketplace. I'm wondering how you happen to see it at this point.
Well, it is the story. I mean, we spent an awful lot of time in January and February talking about South American weather and how that was going to impact prices for corn and soybeans, in particular also wheat, because of Argentine dryness. But, this week has been all about the Ukraine and Russia and what's going to happen there. And I'm going to tell you, if somebody tells you they know what's exactly going to happen in the markets because of this aggression by the Russians, they're just blowing smoke because nobody really knows what's going to happen. One thing we do know is they're large producers of wheat. Ukraine's a large producer of corn, mostly sent into the export market. And they are a large producer of sunflowers. Now, with a small inventory left of palm oil and virtually no canola, sunflowers were going to pick up some of that slack. And at this stage of the game, there's not any sunflowers or sunflower oils moving out of the country of Ukraine. So that's been a big factor. Usually, Todd, we talk about the beans being driven by the meal side of the market, but This winter, we've been talking about renewable biofuels and now lack of palm oil and other vegetable oils. And so the bean oil side of this bean market has been a big driver. As I look at the markets today, that bean oil, palm oil was lower overnight. And the bean oil today is down $2.50. So, you know, we're seeing very jumpy type markets, but the fundamental story on beans is really about the oil side of things. On the beans, we've got kind of two different stories. We've got an old crop story where our inventory is rather low. We've got a new crop story, and part of that is talk about how many acres we're going to have of beans this year. Certainly the rally that we've seen in corn has enticed some of the middle part of the corn belt to think maybe I should be growing more corn this year. But the bean side of things with November beans in the 1450 range, that looks pretty attractive too. I think fertilizer will be a major issue on what gets planted this year. Guys that have bought nitrogen fertilizer and haven't applied it or don't have it on farm may be looking around, looking for something else because they can't get their supplies out of other countries that produce those goods. I noticed that urea prices at the Gulf rallied about 29% this week, and that's just all a big logistics problem. When I look at the bean side of things, the old crop beans are just, you know, they've been on fire. We've made some all-time highs in the beans with the March bean futures up over $17 this week. But the November beans, the new crop beans, seem to be rather stalled out on rallies. We can't get too much above 1475, but it looks like on dips, we're going to find support at about the $14 area. Again, it's going to be very dependent on how the bean oil acts. The bean meal had a rally this week when beans were higher, but right now as we record this, we're about unchanged on the meal side of things. Crush margins in the U.S., China, elsewhere in the world, crush margins are still outstanding. So we need to keep in mind that we've been talking about the export market, and we had sales again today to China and Mexico of soybeans, that these sales that are on the books on the export side of things had been the whole story, but now these outstanding crush margins are something to talk about.
How do they compare to what's been happening in the corn and the ethanol side?
Well, the ethanol margins about Thanksgiving time were on the plus side over a dollar, but now they are in the red by about 25 cents. That doesn't make anybody really want to keep busy on the ethanol side of production. Now, if you got enough alternate other products that you're pulling off the corn, you will continue grinding, but those that are really set up for ethanol are not doing that. Keep in mind, and we've talked about this before, Todd, that ADM, the old ADM in Peoria, hadn't produced ethanol for quite a number of years. And about 3.5 years ago, they went in and did a major rebuild, and they have been producing vodka for quite a long time now. That vodka is mostly sent for export.
Is the point that ethanol is just at the end of its build out and extra capacity is being used somewhere else?
I think so. And there was a Reuters story that came out early today that said that the White House was investigating right now whether or not to keep food price inflation down, that they might not either eliminate or lower the ethanol mandate for right now. Now that, you know, seems so backwards to us people who are involved in ethanol production or growing corn for ethanol to take that mandate down at this stage of the game. Yeah, we'd like to lower food prices, but that would just raise, it looks to me, it would raise fuel prices. So what's the trade-off?
It would be an interesting way to approach higher food prices, that's for sure. Speaking of food, can we talk a little bit about the livestock sector? I really didn't take very much of a look at the cattle on feed numbers from last week, and then I think there's some interesting functions happening in that marketplace today as well.
Yeah, the cattle on feed numbers really weren't that big of a deal, but we are seeing weights on cattle had been record high, and they're sneaking back a little bit lower. But on Friday morning, we gapped lower in the live cattle and the feeder cattle both on the nearby issues. Now, this week's fed cattle market had been called steady to higher, and we came in steady to a couple bucks lower. So we've got April cattle gapped down this morning at 138 and just kind of kept on going. We got April cattle down to 133.50 shortly after the opening, actually. So we've had a huge $4.50 trading range, and we're back towards the higher end of that, but we still have this big gap lower, and that doesn't look very promising right now. Feeders did the same thing, too, and I think it's on the big gains that we've gotten in feed prices, but the March feeder cattle had a gap down through 155, and it's a big gap, so that will... and again, we're in the middle of the trading range as we speak here, the middle, late part of the morning. But, you know, it really looks pretty ugly.
And finally, any advice for producers as they try to manage risk this week or next week, if they need to at all, related to corn and soybeans?
Well, I think you've got to continue to watch these markets pretty carefully. I think we've got a lot of risk in the basis, particularly on old crop. What I see is end users buying corn in particular have switched out of putting their bids out against the May futures to the July. Now, 2 days in a row, we saw the inverse, the May-July inverse, just swell. And that's just says to me that the end user does not want to take the risk that May futures will do something crazy that they can't really manage that. So they moved to the July that they thought was a little bit more steady. So I think there's basis risk, particularly on the old crop here. New crop, I think you need to be a little bit patient, but I don't know. I'm looking, we made a new contract high on Friday by just a hair, and we just haven't been able to hold that. So it'll be interesting to see as we go into next week whether December corn is able to get back in that 635, 640 range and stay there. On the new crop beans, it seems to me we're just a little bit nervous and a little jumpy. When we see these big trading ranges and big wide price swings, that says to me that funds, which are really long, both corn and the beans, funds are not willing to go home for a long weekend or a weekend like we've got here when there's a lot of uncertainty over what will happen with Ukraine and Russia, that they'll spread, maybe they'll be long the wheat and long the corn, but then they'll spread the beans by being sellers against it. So I think this market just tends to be really jumpy. Watch the bean oil. We made all-time highs in the bean oil this week. It'll be interesting to see whether we close $3 or $4 off those highs. And that's what I'm really watching. I don't think you can step in front of this freight train and be a wholesale seller, but you do need to protect your uninsured bushels, I think, at current levels on the percentage that you didn't cover with your crop insurance.
Ellen Dearden is with Ag Review. She's in Morton, Illinois. Now let's turn our attention to our special guest for the day. Dan Bossiem is in Chicago at Ag Resource Company. Dan, thank you for taking the time and joining our conversation today. I want you to start with the CME Group itself, because I was thinking that expanded trading limits just went into effect automatically. They did for wheat and for corn for a little bit, but then things didn't expand in the way we expected. Why did that happen, and what was the thought process, do you know?
Well, Todd, it's been a really special week for wheat. If we go back, you know, just to last Friday, wheat was limit down at $8.59 relative to May Chicago. We have rallied $3.50 a bushel this week. And so there was a meeting late yesterday, a committee meeting, because when you get to limits, you can go a half a limit above where the futures would normally trade. So we had wheat at 50 cents. It went to 75. But then we need a committee to vote to say, do we do that again? In other words, do we increase another half, which would have taken us to about $1.12. And the committee decided to keep it at 75 cents, even though wheat in the synthetic market, and when you look at March futures, made a new all-time high at $13.40, or even some hints in the synthetic option markets that wheat could be as high as $14, at least in that. So there's a tremendous amount of margin pressure, unlike when wheat went to $13.34 back in that year was 2008. This is that was an orderly rally where index fund money kept going. People could get in and out. They could manage their positions. This one has been pretty much limit up for the last 3 days, and it's causing financial strain, if you will, within the brokerage community.
Now turn your attention to the macroeconomics that are pushing that along. I know the war in Ukraine is there. Inflation probably too. Other things around the planet as it relates to short crops, particularly out of South America. Where do you want to start?
Well, we can start in any or all of that. I mean, I think the place we should start, Todd, is probably the war that's ongoing in Ukraine and Russia. When you look at some of the prices of maybe some Russian companies, state-owned like Lukoil or some of those, they're trading, you know, very, very cheaply, pennies on the dollar these days. And so the Russian economy is in a free fall, and some are now suggesting that within the next couple of weeks, Russia could default on some of its debt. We'll see how that all works out, but sanctions, especially the SWIFT sanction, is surely having a dramatic impact on the Russian economy. Whether or not this pushes President Putin to be more aggressive in terms of his actions against Ukraine will yet to be seen, but there was a lot of concern Friday morning in Ukraine, of course, of their firing on a nuclear plant. When you look at the rest of the world, I mean, the U.S. economy is very strong and growing dramatically in a post-COVID fashion. And I think you can say the same thing for portions of Europe, including the U.K. We added over 600,000 to the job lineup last month. And when we look at it, our big concern is inflation, both from a standpoint of wage inflation, as people are now taking home more money, but also from a standpoint of scarcity of supply that the war is producing. So the job for the Federal Reserve has gotten more arduous in our view. And although Fed Chairman Powell said he needed to increase rates only 25% in the upcoming March meeting, we think there's a litany of higher rates to come. And as you think about it, we all need to understand where the natural rate of inflation is, and then probably add 1.5 or 2% on top of that, so that we can figure out where maybe the long bond would be going or the mortgage market as we go forward. The Fed has added $9 trillion to its balance sheet. It needs to offload that and start doing that rather quickly. And so there's a lot of things that are now working in the world economy.
So you think that in the Fed will be more than a quarter point then?
I would say there's still a 25% chance, even though Chairman Powell said not, because there are other voting members that may want to be stronger, and maybe this morning's jobs report changes it. But somehow this Fed has got to get in front of inflation, and they need to be aggressive with shock and awe. And, you know, if the natural rate of inflation, just to use the number, is 4.5%, they need to have the long bond closer to something like 6.5, which, you know, today when we're sitting everything at zero practically seems like a long ways away.
All right, now let's talk about agricultural commodities. We'll start with corn and old crop in particular. I've not really talked a lot about old crop in recent months, mostly because the price was high enough that farmers, if they made a decision, were making money. Now they're looking at a whole different bevy of issues and trying to think, well, how much money can I really make, I suppose?
Yeah, no, we've rallied strongly in the last week. In fact, we reached $8 a bushel relative to spot March futures today. There's only been 8 weeks that we can look backwards in time in which we've traded at $8. So this is rarefied air. You know, it's if you've got old crop, it's not a difficult decision. You're making lots of money. If you want to be greedy, so be it. But these are doggone good prices. And so somewhere along the line, you probably need to reward the market. I think new crop is a little more difficult, but when you look at spreads this week, we also had the May July corn spread make it out to about 45 cent premium. And so all of this demand seems to be front loaded. And I think a lot of that's tied back to, of course, you know, the Ukrainian corn exports of around 14 million metric tons, 550 million bushels that somehow got pushed to other destinations, including the United States. And so the CIF market down at the Gulf is very strong. Barge rates are moving up. There's a strong pull for corn. But boy, this market is going to be volatile. So when wheat does trade, you will see corn prices coming off. And I think that's what the U.S. farmer needs to understand.
Are beans a different beast at this point, or are they following? How do you view that marketplace?
We view that as wheat rallied strongly this week, that people reached back and bought anything that was close to it, and corn was a cousin, so they bought corn. A few people did try soybeans, but the performance has not been as good. But we do have this ongoing cash tightening down in Brazil and the United States. My South American company named Ag Resource Brazil this last week cut the soybean crop estimate there to 119.5. And so we believe CONAB will come down. A large reason for that is that the Rio Grande do Sul, that southern part of Brazil, really never caught the rain that they needed. And so when you look back at the last CONAB number, which is the USD equivalent, that number needs to fall at least 4 to 5 million tons. And if that happens, you're going to be in that 120 million metric tons. All combined, this year, it looks like Brazil, Argentina, and Paraguay are now nearing losing 40 million metric tons or 1.4 billion bushels. That's a record by a large amount. So as we go forward, that cash tightening will underpin the soybean market and may take us to new highs. But I think soybeans are something for later in the summer, maybe mid to late summer, as opposed to today. That cash tightness will really resonate as we get into June and July.
Anything else that we should talk about that you've been watching closely?
There is so much going on in terms of agriculture. We see policy now getting involved where, you know, the Biden administration is looking at RFS in terms of if they change those levels, will that help them maybe tap down on food inflation? I think there's going to be talk forthcoming. Do we give SWIFT carve outs for Russian grain if world wheat prices keep rising? So I want everybody to remember that policy, there's always a side of tight stocks and the shifting of demand, but somehow governments get involved in our business because it is food, and that could have some significant headline risk as we think about markets maybe a month or two down the road.
Dan Bossi is with Ag Resource Company. You've been listening to Commodity Week from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. You may hear the whole of our program anytime you'd like on our website. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Dan Bossi of Ag Resource Company, Ellen Dearden from AgriView, along with Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing, and Aaron Curtis of Midco. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.